What's going on, guys, and welcome out to the fourth episode of the Sports Hour Podcast. Peyton Taylor alongside Toby Leach, Chuck Spencer, Grady Gardner, Buzz Gardner, and a new addition today, Corey Willis. Not a senior like us. He has moved on. He's in the big boy world. Corey, how's it going, man?
Well, I'm still looking for a job, so I don't know if big boy world really, you know.
Look, you were stocking at Dollar General. You were living the dream that your degree led you to.
Very true. Finance.
But we're back over Anchor tonight because, guys, big news. I'm an uncle. I beat y'all to it. Can we get a round of applause for that? Come on. I mean, there we go. Thank you. Thank you, please.
What a world we're living in.
I'm telling you. Look, hey, fun fact, by the way, dad, mom, baby, all doing great. The baby's birthday is now shared with Matt Corral. So in about 21 years, I ain't going to have to worry about money. I'm going to be somewhere nice and breezy. It's going to be perfect because I'm going to have my little nephew taking care of me.
Dang.
2038, already first round recruit to Ole Miss. Going to wear number two?
Oh,
Saban's
already got him. He's already recruiting from the North Mississippi Medical Center. But, guys, today we got a lot to talk about, so let's jump right into it. Obviously, the main thing we're going to talk about today is the NFL Conference Championship games. And kind of like it was last weekend, you know, wild card weekend was hit and miss in some games. We talked about last weekend in the divisional round, maybe one of the best weekends of football we've ever seen from the playoffs. And the conference championship lived up to about all my expectations.
Chiefs games, to me, 21-3 going into halftime. And the Chiefs could have clearly scored again right before half. But with those adjustments that Zach Taylor made at halftime and how that defense played in the second half, it was just beautiful to not only see that defense play so well, but just Joe Burrow just magnify how great he's been this whole entire postseason.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the funny thing about it is you look back at, you know, discussion boards, Reddit, Twitter, things along that line, and you look up Zach Taylor, and most people thought, all right, you know, Taylor gets one more bridge year with Burrow, and then they fire him and they get somebody else in because Taylor's just not a great coach. And that seemed to be a general consensus that the Bengals were going to be bad this year. Taylor was going to be the bridge coach, and then they were going to go hire somebody great to, you know, help with Joe Burrow's progression in his career. And now I think Zach Taylor's just one win away from never having to buy another meal in Cincinnati ever again.
Well, in all honesty, when the year started, I mean, they started off getting beat by the Jets. I mean, they had multiple columns in the Cincinnati News about how they were rolling in the last place in the AFC North and a stacked AFC North with Lamar Jackson, the Browns, and the Steelers, even though they had a sort of a down year this year. But the way that they finished and turned it around, it's nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah, coming off that, the Bengals, I looked yesterday, the Bengals had the same eyes as the Jets and the Jaguars to reach the Super Bowl. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and I think that Bengals and Chiefs game, it lived up to all the expectations. I was actually going on TikTok over the past couple of days, and I saw some people, they were doing some highlights of Joe Burrow, and they started off the TikTok with showing how every analyst, every fan, everything had, you know, had him going 6-11. And then it cut back to Joe Burrow smoking that cigar and standing on his good buddy's shoulders. And it was just really, really, really great.
Yeah. You know, we talked about last week how Joe Burrow, you know, we argued whether he was a top five quarterback, and he's just continued to build that case. And again, now he goes up against what I would have to figure is probably going to be one of the best defenses he'll see all year in 2 weeks. And, man, I mean, what a legacy you can already build. I saw Joe Burrow is the first number one overall pick in his first two seasons to reach a Super Bowl. And to do that with the Cincinnati Bengals, no less, it's just an unbelievable achievement.
I saw something where Rams have the coaching staff, the Rams have the defense, Rams have an offense, they have the firepower. But the Bengals have Joe Burrow. And I think that's an even playing field once you just calculate all the odds that come together on that.
And I think the Bengals really, really played well because they step up. You know, you got the juggernaut in the Chiefs, you know, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. They played one great football game. But I think push come to shove at the end of the as the time hit triple zeros or going into overtime, and when they finally kicked that field goal, I think the Bengals just wanted it more. I think the Chiefs, you know, they thought they had all the talent and they were going to come in and run over the Bengals. That first half was a great half of football for Kansas City, but Cincinnati never gave up. They never quit. They kept on fighting the entire game, and I think that shows what Cincinnati is building. They're building a team and an atmosphere that they don't quit.
Well, from one correction, Toby, I have to say, I think it was one good half from the Chiefs. It wasn't a very good second half. The QBR for Patrick Mahomes in the second half was 1.6. I mean, QBR that's that low in the second half, I mean, that's really hard to overcome.
Well, you know, from a technical standpoint, you look at it and the Chiefs obviously, like you said, rolled through the first half. They're leading 21-3. It looks like they're about to roll at home, head straight to face the Rams or the 49ers. And then you go back to earlier in the season when the Chiefs struggled. They started out 2-4, 3-4, and Mahomes was struggling, turning the ball over at an alarming rate. And it really seemed like in the second half and in overtime, the Bengals were able to do what just made Patrick Mahomes struggle. They got a good pass rush in the second half. They did a much better job in the coverage. And you saw Patrick Mahomes forcing so many more things in the second half than the first half. First half, everything came to him perfectly. He played just like we've seen him play over the last 14, 15 weeks of the season. But then when it mattered most, Zach Taylor, the defensive coordinator, and the Bengals themselves make great adjustments. They get, like I said, they get a fierce pass rush going in the second half. And Mahomes just made too many mistakes in the end of the game. Not putting all the loss on Mahomes, obviously. But he even said it himself. He said in his post-game presser, when you're up 21-3, you have no excuses. You got to go win the football game. And they did not execute in the second half. And credit to the Bengals on, you know, forcing them to be uncomfortable.
And I think it was like a tell of the tape when it come back from the Bengals last week, where that offensive line really did not play very well. And I think just in practice or probably in film, they looked at it and they made the adjustments they needed to buy Joe Burrow some more time in the second half. Now, the first half, you know, you can make the argument they didn't play very well. But the second half, I think Joe Burrow may have got his offensive line together and said, hey, you know, for us to win this ball game, you got to give me some time.
I'm going to give a quick shout-out to one of a Rebel great. Now he's playing in the Super Bowl this year. Mike Hilton, one of the best DBs in Ole Miss football history, playing with the Bengals after being with the Steelers for so long, had a key interception. I think it was the Titans game, and he's played really well all season for the Bengals.
Playing in the NFL. Something 9 pounds. I mean, tough dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, and Hilton, like you said, had the huge interception against the Titans last week that thwarted a scoring drive. This week had 3 tackles, but really had a big PBU, and he's been great. And, you know, obviously, as Ole Miss fans, it's tempting to want to root for the Rebs. And speaking of that, let's move in now to the other side of it, where you've got a half-rebel, Van Jefferson and the Rams. But we're not talking about Van Jefferson. We're talking about the Rams and the 49ers. And that was a game that it was very similar. I mean, if you would have watched just the first half of both games, you're thinking, okay, Chiefs, 49ers rematch in the Super Bowl from 2 years ago. 49ers play really well out of the gate. The Rams struggle. They're slow. Jimmy G plays one of the best halves he played all season in the first half. And then again, kind of like the Bengals did, the Rams were able to make great second half adjustments. They got a pass rush going. You know, I saw on the final 2 drives of the game when, you know, Jimmy G needed to show up, he could have silenced all the critics, all the doubters. He went 1-for-6 for -2 yards and an interception. And obviously, if you watch those last 2 drives, not all on Jimmy G. He was getting hounded every single time he dropped back in those last 2 or 3 drives. But it just shows that the Rams were able to step it up again. Matthew Stafford got it going. They had to pull a little bit of trickery near the end of the third quarter. Found some rhythm, found some momentum, and they overall, again, the Rams, just like the Bengals, first half, they didn't play well. Second half, though, they come out, they execute, they make the 49ers uncomfortable, and they, you know, they advance to the Super Bowl for the first time since they played the Patriots back in 50, I believe it was 51.
Yeah, and the ball at all.
46 yards, 50 yards.
Jimmy G's 4 yards, but like you said, Peyton, I'm not putting this all on Jimmy G because he didn't play, like you said, that last drive. But a big turning point in the game, I think there was 9 minutes left in the fourth. Matthew Stafford throws an absolute duck to the middle of the field, and the 49ers' safety flat out drops it. That changes the whole game. And I think after he drops it, the Rams go down and score after they drop that interception. That was a big turning point in the game.
I think also a big turning point in the game too, or just from the entire game, was I saw in the stats, the Rams didn't get one sack on Jimmy Garoppolo. He wasn't pressured until his last two possessions of the game and where he threw that interception. The entire game, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, they were all non-factors in the ball game. And I feel like that played a huge role in how the 49ers kept it a close game up until the bitter end.
No, yeah, you're exactly right.
The 49ers will have a new quarterback next year. I think that's Jimmy G's ticket out of San Francisco. You just played good first half, but the second half, like, to win a Super Bowl, pressured or not, like, he missed some throws, whether it was behind him or over his head. He missed some easy throws, and commentator, was Romo? I think it was Romo commentating that game. He was saying that's an easy throw, like, he'll make it all game, and missed it. He's not going to be in San Francisco much longer. I think he's –
well, is Trey Lance their guy then, Chuck?
What's that?
Is Trey Lance their guy?
The thing is, it depends on what they think the championship window is. If they think they got another run at it next year, I think they sign a free agent, go after a free agent, and then wait Trey Lance, let them learn it a little bit more. But if they think the window is closed, you're like, yeah, well, I think they – Trey Lance, week one.
You know, Chuck, I agree with part of what you're saying in the 49ers. I do feel like, you know, we talked a little bit about that last week, and I feel like with the 49ers now, you know, not making it, just coming up short for the Super Bowl, I feel like Jimmy G's time is obviously limited. But I disagree that about the championship window, because I feel like the 49ers this past draft drafted Trey Lance. They moved up, expecting him to sit by Jimmy G, behind Jimmy G for a year, because they thought with a year of tutelage under Shanahan that he would factor right into their championship window. And, yeah, you know, I feel like that was a draft pick they made, not going for the most pro-ready this year, but with the guy they thought had the most potential, because if they could get a year behind him, get a year in the system, let him sit behind Jimmy G and put him in, then he fits into the championship window. Because if you ever talk to me about what builds a Super Bowl team, and you might see it in the Bengals, the most important thing I think in today's day and age with how the salary cap is and cap hits, you need to win a Super Bowl with a quarterback that's on a rookie contract.
Not $500 million like Patrick Mahomes.
Exactly. And you know, and again, the Chiefs, his cap hit was only $7 million this year. After this season, Patrick Mahomes' cap hit goes from $7 million to $36 million next year. Chiefs aren't going to be able to bring back every piece they had on a team that was just a few plays away from a Super Bowl. And you have to – and obviously that's the name of the game in the NFL nowadays. You have to pay these quarterbacks this money, because a generational quarterback, you can't let walk, because they're too important, not just to success, but also to ticket sales, because that's what also drives the league in a lot of aspects. But in doing so, it makes it so hard to win Super Bowls. You look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady took cap salary cuts for many, many years with the Patriots. Because, and we talked about this a little bit, I mean, his wife's a freaking supermodel. He doesn't need that money. And that's a well-known thing that he took those pay cuts. And the Patriots always put behind a great defense with it, a couple playmakers behind, along with Bill Belichick. That's how Brady – that was one of the key components to Brady making his Super Bowl runs, as many as he did. So now I feel like the 49ers, they feel like, okay, let's shift. Let's get rid of Jimmy G's contract, open up that cap, sign just a couple more pieces, and let's run it with Trey Lance and hope he fits in the championship window.
I still think coming back to what I said last week, is I still think Jimmy G, I don't necessarily think he gets cut or moved in the offseason. I personally still believe that they're going to do what I said last week, and I think he's going to start this season, and he's going to play, you know, four or five games, see how good he is, and see if any teams kind of toward the trade deadline will want him. Because I think just based off of his postseason track record this season, there isn't a team that wants Jimmy G.
And so I think right now, you don't think that?
I do not believe that, because he played he played really below average in this game, and I think if you let him start the season and he plays a little bit better, you may be able to get some draft capital back for him. I don't necessarily think this offseason, if you try to move him, you're going to get anything beyond a fourth round pick for him.
Carson Wentz went for what, 2 second round picks?
That's 2 second round picks in the NFL is a lot for Carson Wentz.
So I have a question here for everybody. It's more along Chiefs and their contract. So Kelce becomes an unrestricted free agent in 2026. Tyreek Hill, will become a free agent after the 2022 season. So after next season, what do you do if you're the Chiefs? Do you just ride that contract out, or do you trade Tyreek or re-sign him and trade Kelce? Because, like, if you had to pick between one, are you picking Kelce?
I think overall, for what he does, I think Kelce is a lot more valuable than Tyreek Hill is.
I agree.
He'll be about 34 years old, though.
I mean, he's 30. He could be 34 years old and still playing at an elite level. Can you say, you know, 3 years from now, is Tyreek Hill going to still be what he is? I can pretty much guarantee that, you know, 3-4 years from now, Travis Kelce will still be one of the best tight ends in the league.
Also, Chris Jones is 4 years, $80 million, too. He'll be an unrestricted free agent in 2024, which is 2 years from now.
You know, so you know how the Saints are now in, cap purgatory, $75 million over the cap. And the reason they were there is because they put all these void years on and they kept essentially kicking the salary cap can down the road. It wouldn't surprise me to see the Chiefs try to pull off something like that to try to extend their championship window a little bit longer, sign guys like Tyreek and Travis Kelce, kick that can down the road. Now, obviously, now the Saints are looking at one of the worst rebuild situations in the NFL, possibly, depending on what coach they hire. You've got to cut multiple guys because, like I said, you're $75 million out of the cap. They're going to have to take multiple contracts off. So the Chiefs, I think they kind of have a choice. Do you let guys like Kelce walk and possibly Tyreek in a couple of years? Do you let – or do you kick that salary can down the road and say, all right, we're in for a horrible rebuild in about 5 or 6 years, but let's see if we can't win one or two more Super Bowl rings before.
I mean, piggybacking off that, you know, if your championship window is still there, which it is, you know, the Chiefs will still be a top dog next season and probably the season after that. You know, you could keep kicking that down the road. If you think Patrick Mahomes and this team can win you 2 Super Bowls over the next 4 or 5 years, I wouldn't see why you wouldn't kick that down the road.
I feel like Patrick Mahomes is the type of guy that would restructure his contract to keep Kelce and Tyreek Hill on the roster. I kind of
disagree in that aspect. I think when you get paid that amount of money, you know, you expect to get that money, and I don't necessarily think that he would. Now, I'm not saying, you know, he might, but I don't necessarily think that that he would do that.
$500 million, he can own the Royals. He doesn't need that much money. He can take $150 million and still be comfortably living.
But I mean, when you think about that, though, $500 million to compared to $150 million, which one would you choose? I think I would take $500. I mean, $500 million lasts you your whole life plus your children's lives, or you could say you could win 2 or 3 Super Bowls. I mean,
look at Tom Brady, look at Patrick Mahomes. Which one are you going to remember more?
I mean, I think we're all going to remember Patrick Mahomes the rest of our lives because he signed the largest contract in NFL history.
At 50 years, somebody would be a billionaire by then playing NFL football.
Well, either way, that's one thing. It's harder to figure out what guys are going to do with cap decisions and, you know, restructuring contracts because you just never know. But let's look now because we still got so many things to talk about. Just preview a little bit of the Super Bowl coming up in 2 weeks. And, guys, I don't know about y'all, but first of all, I am 2-0 this week. Picked the Super Bowl perfectly. Chuck, I believe you picked the Bengals with me. I don't know if you picked the Niners or the Rams.
I went 1-1. I lost the Rams one.
So I am 2-0, and which Grady is 1-1 now, correct?
Yeah, we're tied now at the top.
Yes, sir. Well, did we ever decide what the winner was going to get in this deal?
We never decided. We need to come up with something on that. Maybe our listeners can let us know.
Absolutely. Shameless plug. Put it in now. Twitter and Instagram at Sports Hour Pod. Make sure you're tuned in there and let us know. Leave us something. We're gonna post something fun coming up in the next week. So y'all stay tuned for that. as we get ready for our Super Bowl episode next week. But talking about what I was going to say, I feel like this is about the most enjoyable Super Bowl we could have gotten. You know, we don't have the 49ers, we don't have the Chiefs, we don't have the typical names. Bengals, Rams, not only one Super Bowl between these teams, and it came in 99 with the Rams. So, you know, you're going to see new faces finally get a ring. And I think personally, it's going to be one of the better matchups we could have gotten out of the whole postseason.
I mean, coming back up, what I said last week. What I said last week, and I think it still stands. I think this will be one of the best Super Bowls of all time. And I think the redemption story about how, you know, everybody counted the Bengals out and now they're playing for a Super Bowl. I think that story writes itself. And I personally, I'm really, really excited, not just for the commercials this year. I'm actually excited to watch the Super Bowl this year.
All right. Now let me ask who you're picking. That's coming next week. Who are you rooting for as a fan? Who are you rooting for?
As a fan, I am rooting for the Bengals. I want Joe Burrow to get it. I do love Stafford, man, but as a fan of football, man, I really want the Bengals to win.
As a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I'm rooting for the Rams.
I'm rooting for the Rams because Cooper Kupp won me a fantasy league this year, and he's that dude, so I'm Rams on the way.
100% going Bengals. Got a Reb on there, so go Rebs.
Corey, you are not – and by the way, Corey's not a football guy, as to why we introduced him and hadn't heard from him in 20 minutes. Corey, you can at least give us who you might be.
Don't worry, I got this. I will never root for an LSU guy, so don't worry.
All right, I can get behind that. I can get behind that at least at the very
least. Nice, Corey.
Yeah, can't
do it. I think after this game, I think Joe Burrow, he's going to pull out two cigars after this game.
Look, I
– after the ale.
To be inspired by the great Lee Corso, I never want to root for LSU guys either. And I like Stafford. I do, but he came from Georgia, and that dog is ugly. Give me the Bengals. I'm rooting for the Bengals.
You know, coming, I think I also went 1-1, and I think Garrett went 1-1. So I'm still one up on Garrett for last place. I think I'm one up on him. I think he's still last place.
I got to go opposite ways in the last week. And then if y'all tie, y'all both go in the pool.
Do they both go in the pool, or does the winner, whoever picked the Super Bowl correctly, go in the pool?
No, I think if we tie, it's a Madden game. We should play Madden. Whoever wins, the other person has to go in the pool.
Listeners pick.
Overtime rules on Madden. First team that scores wins. The other team doesn't touch the ball.
All right. I'll allow it.
Let's move on now and talk quickly a little bit more football. We're not going to stay too terribly long in this because we talked about it before, and now it's pretty much common knowledge because it happened over the weekend. But Ole Miss solidifies its portal and gets the long-awaited commitment of Jackson Dart and Michael Trigg to cap off what has to be probably the most successful signing class since 2016.
I'm 100% sure, but it's still Altmaier season here in Oxford.
Big facts, Chuck.
It's going to prove it's Altmaier season.
You know, we're talking all about Jackson Dart and Triggs, and I'm really excited for those guys. Definitely going to be immediate difference makers, but, you know, really as a whole, this was a great, great transfer class for Lane Kiffin. I think he got some incredible pieces all over the field, especially on that defense, man. We had so many great guys on that defense. And I think he really wanted to focus on that. And I think when he focused on that and didn't necessarily go after a quarterback super hard, I think that was a plus. And that kind of made it where guys like Jackson Dart and Triggs really wanted to look at us because they saw that the whole team got better.
Not including Dart or Trigg, who is the transfer you're most excited about coming in?
Jared Ivey from Georgia Tech. 6'6", edge rusher. He's a great replacement for Sam Williams. Great replacement for Sam.
Yeah, definitely Ivey.
I think I could agree with that. Let me make sure, Jared Ivey is that guy, right? Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that was.
That's a huge pickup too, just to protect Trigg or Altmaier next season. I'm looking forward to a great line next year with Broker coming back as well, not going to the draft and staying in next year.
I think some names kind of to watch out for: Jordan Watkins, Ladarius Tennyson. I think those are two really big names, and then of course Zach Evans. I think Zach Evans really is probably a huge difference maker that I'm really excited to watch him play for sure.
He's one that got lost in the dust, and he's a 5-star. That's crazy.
I know, right?
My guy is Ashim Young out of Iowa State. Was the defensive freshman of the year in the Big 12 last year. He's going to be a multiple year eligibility guy, hopefully for us. And an absolute standout. I mean, his freshman year, I played in all 12 games, earned 9 starts, led all freshman tacklers with 50 tackles, tied for 6 nationally with 3 forced fumbles. Just a great player. I expect he might play a little bit of high safety, a little bit of rover linebacker possibly. I feel like he's going to be one of the more versatile players we picked up on defense.
I think too, and this is a hot take, but from what I've seen, especially the recruiting class come in, because there's a lot more guys we could talk about. We could spend 2 hours talking about each one of these dudes, but I'm going to say this now, Ole Miss will have a top 50 defense next season.
I think the talent's there for it. I think absolutely. I mean, you look at Jared Ivey, you look at Ashim Young, you look at Troy Brown, who from Central Michigan, who is, a very, very good player at the linebacker position. It's very experienced. Tennyson, you're bringing in a couple young corners, a couple of great defensive linemen out of high school. You've got pieces and talent all over this defense. There's more talent in this defense than I think we've had on defense since maybe that 2014, 2015 team. Now, I'm not saying they're going to be better. I'm just saying ever since those teams, I think this is the most talent we've had on defense since those teams coming up in this next year.
So, I actually saw – I'm not sure which analyst it said, but I was reading on ESPN today, combining the transfers and then our original commits we have, you would make Ole Miss the 13th best recruiting class in the nation as it stands 2 days before recruiting day.
Yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, did they get lost in the shuffle? Tywan Malone and Damon Clowney. There were two big gets out of high school. I think Clowney was 2 to 3 years ago. Maybe I think it's 2, and then or 3 if you count this last class. But I think Malone's gonna be a sophomore this next year, and Clowney I think is gonna be a redshirt sophomore, either a junior. And those are two guys that are gonna be really good on the defensive line for us next year.
You know, we were talking a few episodes ago about the high turnover that Ole Miss had. You know, I could make this statement, and I think we could all agree, is I think this turnover is like one of the best things that's ever happened to Ole Miss, because we allowed our guys to actually go out there, our coaching staff to go out there and get guys that we know are going to be immediate difference makers. And I think that's helped us out a lot. It really pushed Lane Kiffin to say, okay, I've got guys leaving, I need to replace these guys. And I think he did a wonderful job with doing that.
Yeah, and I have an early hot take.
I think you're there too.
Ole Miss season next year, Ole Miss is one receiver away for competing for SEC championship next year.
And you know, you talk about that. I'm pretty sure there's a couple wide receivers that may be committing. I'm not sure if they're 4-stars. I can't remember exactly their name, but I know that Ole Miss is in their top 3. And you know, I haven't really seen any crystal balls about it, but they're very possible that we could get 2 4-star wide receivers Wednesday.
Obviously, National Signing Day is Wednesday, and you know, it becomes, like we talked about earlier, not near as paid attention to because you see so many guys committing in December now, but hopefully the Rebs will pick out a couple on Wednesday. Let's move now into what we started last week. Again, still working on the name. I'm not sold on it yet, but hot take or valid, and let's get into it. Just a few today that I've seen around. Let's start with the first one, just kind of a simple one, that the – Bengals versus Rams Super Bowl has the most likable quarterback matchup we've seen in a long time in a Super Bowl.
I think that's completely valid.
That's valid. There's no Tom Brady or somebody that you can hate, that everybody always hates. I feel like everybody likes these guys because neither one's been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Kind of an underdog type deal.
Right, Corey. Thank you.
I definitely say valid, but it still doesn't beat the Peyton Manning and Drew Brees Super Bowl in 2006, I believe.
No, that was 2009.
Oh yeah, 9. I got them. I got my 6 and my 9 flip flops.
Nice.
Nice.
Yes, sir, Topi.
You know, he had to throw one in there. But yeah, coming back, yeah, I think it's definitely valid. I think Matthew Stafford, everybody loves him, and Joe Burrow's quickly become the most likable player in any professional sport. I'm going to say that.
All right, here's another one for you. Ole Miss, regardless if USC lands Caleb Williams, like we do think they will, but regardless of that, Ole Miss still has had the best transfer portal recruitment period this season.
I would say the best transfer portal of all time since transfer portal's been, like,
established.
This is one of the best transfer portal classes of all time.
I think it's valid, but I have to for the transfer portal. I've been a Lakers fan since I was born, and then the Lakers this year have Russell Westbrook, they have Anthony Davis, LeBron James.
Who?
Guys have a lot of talent. But how do these guys mesh? Lakers this year, we'll get to them in a minute. They haven't meshed very well. With all this talent, with all these egos, with all these guys coming together into – how will these guys mesh? That's my question for next year with the Ole Miss.
I think it is super valid. I think that transfer class was incredible, and I think a guy that can make a team mesh so well is Lane Kiffin. And I think we're going to do something special this next season. I know, you know, we talked about this before, that Ole Miss, you know, has a ceiling of probably, you know, everybody thinks 9 wins. You could say we could get 6, but I think Lane Kiffin has the talent and he has the coaching capabilities that that Ole Miss can do something special, really special.
So I don't really have much say on, you know, past Ole Miss transfer portals, but I know that with the way that the city and campus is reacting to it, you can tell that there's a lot of support that, you know, you can kind of expect a lot better of a season than, say, like 3 or 4 months ago, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly 100%. Right.
100%. Great point.
100%.
Because you had, you know, got after a couple weeks after the Sugar Bowl, or maybe just a week after the Sugar Bowl, after, you know, Ely announced he was leaving, Snoop announced he was leaving, Parrish announced he was leaving, Plumlee announced he was leaving, Durkin gets hired away, and Levy gets hired away. There were Ole Miss fans that were saying the sky was falling, Lane Kiffin is being lazy on a beach vacation, and that this team's falling apart, and we are going to be fighting for bowl eligibility next season. And now you're looking at a team that, if they gel right, the new coordinator hires work, as we hope they will, you're looking at another possibly 9 to 10 win team.
Yeah, I just wanted to be known.
We said we were only going to have 6 wins. I mean, that was one of the nightmares that we were dreaming about at the time. And now that this has happened, I mean, we're screaming 9, 10 wins. I mean, how fast your brain can change after 3 or 4 people flip to your team.
I just want this to be known. Dating back to the first episode, I said the ceiling was 10 wins. I still think Ole Miss gets it. So I didn't say 6 wins, 9 wins, 7 wins.
We
I said 10
say
wins.
That. I mean, it wasn't like,
oh, no, I said, I am pretty sure I said we would win 10 games.
All right.
I said we would win 10.
Here's the next one. And this is going to be the one I think gets a lot of talk to from y'all. Jackson Dart is, as of right now, the unquestioned starter after committing to Ole Miss. That, and I say that more meaning that Altmyer, we talked about it a little bit, Altmyer will not get a fair shot at the job.
That's valid.
Valid.
Flaming hot take.
I kind of agree with Chuck a little bit. I think right now you could say Jackson Dart is the starter, and now it's time for Luke Altmyer to earn that spot. But I think they're going to have a fair competition. I don't see Dart being the immediate starter. So I'm going to say it's a hot take, and I think Dart will be the starter personally. But I think Lane's going to give him a fair shot, and I think it's going to be a great battle.
Here's a hot take for you. I don't think Luke Altmyer will be on the Ole Miss roster when the fall camp starts.
I think that too. I think he'll be in the portal by the end of the school semester. I think
after the Grove Bowl.
Well, I disagree with that. I disagree with that.
That's fair. You can disagree, but
I think Luke Altmyer, I think he's an Ole Miss guy. He came here. Whether he gets the spot or not, but you have to give Plumlee the credit. You know, he at least played in a season where he, you know, he wasn't playing the position he wanted to, and he gave it a season. He tried it out for a season, and then he left. I think I think Luke Altmyer is going to look at it and he's going to talk to Lane however they want to do it. And I think he's going to sit there for a year. And if he doesn't get the shot, then after the season, I could see him entering the portal. I don't think he'll enter before the season starts or even after spring camp.
I don't. Yeah. What puts him behind the eight ball is that Altmyer was never Lane Kiffin's guy. I mean, Kiffin never recruited him. He recruited Dart. He wanted Dart bad. He flew his jet out to visit Dart.
I mean, when you think about it, when you come in and you coach the Ole Miss Rebels, who do you want to be your guy? Do you want Matt Corral to be your guy, or do you want Luke Altmyer to be your guy? Of course, you're going to pick Matt Corral 10 out of 10.
Jackson Dart.
All right. I mean, yeah, I'm saying Jackson Dart was his guy, but I still think Lane Kiffin's the type of coach that he's going to give everybody a shot to be on the starting lineup.
I want to clear up a couple of things because I disagree with a couple of things being said here. One, and I've heard y'all say it a couple of times. I do want to clear this up. Lane Kiffin did recruit Altmyer. Altmyer came in. He's a true freshman this year. Lane Kiffin's first recruiting class all the way through. Altmyer was recruited by Kiffin. That was not because he was originally a Florida State commit. He flipped to Ole Miss. It wasn't like he was a longstanding Ole Miss commit. He was now necessarily – I'm not saying necessarily he was, you know, Kiffin's unheralded savior at quarterback, but he was recruited by Kiffin. But I don't necessarily agree, Toby, with what you said about Altmyer. And here's the only reason why. I'm not saying that Altmyer is necessarily a quitter, that he's not a competitor, but – when you sat behind Corral and you step in and toss a spot in the Sugar Bowl, and yeah, you didn't perform perfect, but you gave your heart. You can tell. I mean, nobody can say he obviously didn't perform and play as hard with the passion in the Sugar Bowl. But you've seen your fan base so unanimously behind a quarterback, just yearning for them for him to come transfer here. And then calling him the unquestioned starter. The reason I said that take, not necessarily my take, I've seen that all over, you know, that Dart is now the unheralded starter coming in. So I don't necessarily say it because I think Altmyer is a quitter, but I don't know if he's going to get a fair shot at it. Not saying that Kiffin won't have a competition, but I think Dart obviously has all the leverage, all the momentum. If he doesn't win that job, I would not be surprised for Altmyer. Because of seeing the fan base react like this, why should I stay around when y'all, you know, you wanted to kick me out? If Altmyer doesn't win the job in fall camp or in spring camp, whenever it's decided, I don't foresee him staying on the roster very long.
All right, see, follow up question. Where does Luke Altmyer transfer to?
Florida State.
I mean, I don't think there's going to be. I think Florida State's a possibility, but I don't think there's going to be a lack of suitors for him. You know, these guys. They don't just stop getting offers. Like I heard, for instance, you know, MJ Daniels hopped into the portal a couple days ago, and I think one of y'all said it, and I saw it multiple.
It was me.
Yeah, and I saw multiple people say that he probably just didn't have any offers and he jumped out. That you know, I don't think that's true because these guys, you know, they're not jumping into the portal and not getting a single offer. I mean, these are 4 or 5-star guys out of high school that really haven't had their first offer.
You were talking about how you wanted Altmyer gone because you wanted Arch. I mean, that.
Well, and this is the way I see it now is I think with Arch Manning possibly coming, whether he comes or not, you know, that's up in the air. But I think Dart kind of gives us that leverage that saying, you know, we got a guy that we could keep him for 2 or 3 years. If Arch doesn't come, at least we know we got a guy that's going to be here 2 years and maybe leave. But, you know, we can't really hold out for Arch, but I mean, I do want him, but I think a guy that Luke Altmyer, a team he could go to 100% is go join Lebby at Oklahoma, especially when Lebby becomes the head coach next season.
Wow. That's the flaming hot take.
Venables is the worst. Venables is the worst hire of the season. I do not know why Oklahoma did that. Lebby should have been the head coach. And I think when Oklahoma wins 7 games next year, he'll probably get fired.
That's a horrible take. And let's move on.
Think about Altmyer, Texas.
Yeah. I just want you to hook them horns. Texas is back.
No, they're not. And Sark will be fired. Sark will be fired midway through next year. That's the guy. Now,
y'all are talking about Altmyer leaving after.
They jumped.
We're moving to the next topic, Chuck. But let's move to the final topic. This is why we brought Corey along. We're going to finally touch on a little bit of NBA after 4 episodes. As the All-Star starters were announced for the West and the East. I'm going to name them off real quick. along with how many times they've been All-Stars. In the East, it was Kevin Durant, his 12th appearance, the captain of one of the two teams. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 6-time All-Star. DeMar DeRozan, 5-time All-Star. Joel Embiid, also a 5-time All-Star. Trae Young, 2-time All-Star. And then you move into the West. You've got LeBron James, captain, obviously, 18-time All-Star. That's got to be a record. I feel like it definitely is. Stephen Curry, 8-time All-Star. Nikola Jokic, 4-time All-Star. And then two first-timers, Ja Morant and Andrew Wiggins. And Corey, I'm going to push it right to you because we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the day, and you were talking to me about Andrew Wiggins. Go ahead. I want you to start with that.
All right, first, can we give a round of applause for a Memphis Grizzly being a starter? I mean, gosh.
Let's go, grit and grind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the first – was Marc Gasol ever – yeah, he was an all-star.
Yes, he was. Yeah, so, and you know, we in Grit and Grind Nation, we were kind of dark and gloomy days, but then once Ja Morant came to save the day, we put our backs on him. You know, we put us all on our back, and it's great to see him have the season he's having. And I think he has a great great chance to make first-team All-NBA if he stays healthy. But, yeah, Andrew Wiggins is, of course, the one name that kind of steps out, right? And so I did some research, and this isn't a hot take yet, but I got one in the back pocket for later. But Andrew Wiggins, statistically, right, if we look at what he's averaging, 18 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists as a starter. I don't know what to say to that.
It's
the Warrior. Yeah, I
swear. Earlier, Corey was talking to me, and what he said was, I asked him what he was doing for a nice episode. He said, oh, just looking into how Andrew Wiggins might be the worst All-Star starter that we've ever seen.
That's what I was going to say. Yep. I'm looking at PER, which is player efficiency rate. And you have players like Otto Porter Jr., Jeremy Grant, and Miles Bridges above Andrew Wiggins in PER. It's a disgrace to everybody who's ever started on an All-Star team for Andrew Wiggins to be a starter. He might be an All-Star reserve, but nowhere near a starter.
Yeah, so I did the looking in the past decade, just the past decade of All-Star starters, and just looking at, you know, like say sub 20 points per game scorers, and you know, what were their other stats, right? And there's only been one name to pop out to have similar stats and become an All-Star starter or even worse. And I don't want to slander anyone here, Grady and Buzz, but
Kobe,
the worst All-Star starter in the last decade is Kobe Bryant.
What year was that?
And 2013-2014, he averaged 14, 4 rebounds, and 6 assists, which, okay, 6 assists, right? You know, that's –
I mean, that was his last season, correct?
No, no, no. That was his second to last.
Andrew Wiggins. Two different entities in themselves as well.
And I think when they voted him in, wasn't there some rumors that he was going to retire that year? And I think that's why they did it.
Possibly. I think mainly it's name recognition and the fact that, you know, player or the fan vote counts so much. You know, you have Kobe Bryant. But what's crazy about that season is he averaged the 6 assists, which I think was possibly a career high, but he also averaged a career high of 6 turnovers a game. So,
well, and that's also to piggyback on that, you know, what you said about the fan vote. That was, I believe, before they changed the rule to where Zaza Pachulia could not be named an All-Star starter, because originally it used to be, I believe, 75% fan vote, 25% player and media, and now it's 50-50.
Mm-hmm. It was 50-25-25 with players and media.
I believe used to it was 75% fan vote.
It probably was. Yeah.
So, and that's probably a big reason as to why Kobe got that push into an All-Star starter.
You know, talking about the starters, I kind of like seeing some different names on the All-Star starting teams. I think a guy that, you know, jumps out to me, Trae Young, and of course, you know, we don't agree on much, Corey and Peyton, but seeing Ja Morant there, it's really cool kind of seeing some new guys, new faces on that starting lineups.
Okay, so I agree, but at the same time, there are many people that were eligible or should have been eligible based off of positions that deserve it over Andrew Wiggins, that also would have been great names, you know, that deserved that starter spot.
Yeah. Now, what Corey, you were talking to me about it was you think that the All-Star needs to kind of move with the game of how basketball has advanced and changed to be positionless.
Yeah, I think this is pretty I wouldn't say consensus agrees, but it's close to it at least with All-Star and also All-NBA is, you know, you have the two guards and you have two forwards and a center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we look at people and say look at the East, right? You have DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine are some prime examples of their two and three. And then even DeMar has played the four some, right? But you look at it, you know, they're looking for a forward position in the West, and they pick Andrew Wiggins, where you have Devin Booker, Chris Paul, Donovan Mitchell. I mean, you have plenty of Luka. You have plenty of people who statistically are more deserving of that, but also, you know, bigger names. Because if you're trying to get, you know, the best and the biggest names at All-Star Weekend, Andrew Wiggins does not come to mind.
No, and you're exactly right. And one thing that really interests me about that is I went back and looked at the final voting tallies that they released before, because obviously they don't release the final numbers, I don't believe. But the third fan returns, Wiggins was the third front court player, beating out Paul George, Anthony Davis, Draymond, Carmelo, and Karl Anthony Towns. It really surprises me just in general that he beat out those guys in fan vote. And I guess as I think one of you mentioned, and I know Corey, you mentioned it. Really, it's just more, I feel like, of a testament of A, not knowing who to vote for a front court player, and two, saying when you don't know who to vote for, okay, well, let's just give it to this guy. His team's been great this year.
Well, this is also a thing I just saw too, and this is like the teams that lead the NBA and national TV games via ABC, TNT, ESPN, and NBA TV. Of course, the Lakers lead with 42 games. But the next closest is the Golden State Warriors at 41. So, other than the Lakers, the team that people watch the most is the Warriors. And a guy that's on that team, Andrew Wiggins.
That's a conversation for another time. But can we talk about how the Lakers have 42 national television games?
And why not?
The Grizzlies only have six. Yeah,
made your point.
They now only have five because one of them was flexed out the other night.
Another thing, too, is – LeBron James is – how old is he now?
37.
And he's the number one vote getter this year, not even being the best player in the league. I mean, he's not even –
he's still having a great season, let's be honest.
He's having a great season, of course, but, like, we're 24 and 20. We're not a very good team.
24 and 27.
I'm a Lakers fan. But the entire country wants to watch the Lakers play. Either you love the Lakers like we do or hate the Lakers like y'all do. But people want to watch the Lakers just for that reason.
Coming off that is I'm kind of glad the Grizzlies aren't getting a lot of these national televised games, because it's keeping the pressure off of them. They're going out there and being the best team in the league, and nobody knows who they are. And when they come playoff time, you know, it's going to be real nice, because they can finally see how good that Grizzlies team is, and I can't wait for it.
Well, you know what Ja tweeted out after he got picked as a starter, right? He said, "Welcome to the darkness." He always likes the darkness where people aren't looking, and he can do his work and get the recognition at the end, right?
No, so yeah, it's
great.
I agree with that, man. And it's really cool. It's really cool seeing that they're the most underrated team best team.
John Morant is the most posted athlete on Instagram right now. Bleacher Report, House of Highlights, ESPN. He gets posted more than LeBron right now, and you can't argue with that.
Okay,
he's not under the radar.
No, I'm not saying John Morant is. I'm talking about the team in general. Because everybody's posting Ja Morant, but they're forgetting about Triple J, Desmond Bane, Stephen Adams. They're forgetting about everybody else, and they're just posting Ja Morant. But the team as a whole is the most underrated team in the NBA at this current moment.
Well,
very true.
Let's get back onto the fan returns, and I want to talk a little bit more about the positionless type voting, because I feel like that's one way the NBA is leaning. You know, Corey, when we talked about it, I think we agreed on the two All-Star starters that we thought probably didn't deserve to be there were Andrew Wiggins and Trae Young. And when you look at it, you have a lot of different names. For Wiggins in the West, like you said, Luka, AD, Paul George, even though is Paul George still hurt, correct?
Yeah, he's still hurt.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's Devin Booker. Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell.
Where's Klay Thompson at? Is he on the All-Star team?
No.
He's not? Okay.
He almost did.
Over in the East, Trey Young, I said I feel like Zach LaVine may have been one of the biggest snubs of the entire All-Star weekend.
DeMar is in the MVP race, and it's because of the position he plays. Technically, he's a forward, you know?
Yeah, I know.
That's a big problem.
No, I agree completely. But even besides LaVine with Trey Young, if you have this position, this type look, you have Jason Tatum. I mean, that's another big name that pops out to you as possibly an All-Star starter having a great year. Now, so also, Corey, you said you had that hot take. I want to hear it, so I'm going to put you on the spot.
All right, so we've been talking about the Grizzlies, right?
Yes.
And I was looking. So Desmond Bane, right? So we can all agree he's fourth option, maybe third, if you take into the fact with like Dylan Brooks being injured a lot or Triple J is inconsistent, right?
Yeah.
Desmond Bane is averaging almost the exact same numbers as Andrew Wiggins. Put Desmond Bane in the starting lineup. That's what I'm saying.
Dude, Desmond.
18-4-3.
Wow.
I went to the Warriors, or not the Warriors, excuse me, the Grizzlies Wizards game on Saturday. And that was my first time getting to see Ja, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson Jr. Pretty much my first time getting to see this team in action. And oh my gosh, if I was not the most impressed with Ja, it was Desmond Bane. That dude has an unbelievable motor. I told you coming last year out of the draft, Corey, that most people had said he was the most NBA-ready player in that draft. And after watching tape and film on him, I told you I thought they were correct. And it's been – I would believe that take's been close to proven because high motor on the offensive and defensive end, great efficiency, a lot more athletic than you would take him to be. And he just fits so perfectly into that squad. And when you watch him, he's been – and not just that, in these past few games with Brooks being out, he's been on an absolute tear.
So
I love this NBA talk we were doing. It's the Grizzlies Scent Fest, but continue.
So to go up against the Lakers fanboy. So Desmond Bane, I think, actually has more player recognition than Andrew Wiggins. You know, did y'all see the game against the Lakers the Grizzlies had where who was it going against LeBron, right? It was Desmond Bane in his face, right? I mean, I think he's got the motor. He's got the attitude that really, I mean, the Grizzlies love that. But also, I think other players, you know, the vets are respecting it. And Andrew Wiggins is known to kind of fade in and out of games, fade in and out of weeks. You know, he's okay with being the third option on a team, maybe even fourth, play his defense, right, catch some lobs or make some timely cuts. I think if the players vote, you know, a little heavier, I think Desmond Bane gets it over, you know, some of these other guys who are in, you know, in positions to get the reserve spots.
Well, and the fact of the matter is, I think not just in All-Star voting, but in the MVP race and in the All-NBA race, why are we not factoring player vote more in the media and the media fan vote? Because personally, if I'm wanting to decide the most valuable player of the league, I trust the players who are going up against those guys every night rather than the media who, you know, may, you know, find storylines to get behind. Because even this year, I think you're starting to see, you know, Giannis, Joel, and Jokic are the three names being discussed. And really it's starting to come down to Jokic and Embiid. And I feel like it's because of that voter fatigue we've seen in the past with Steph and LeBron. And now we're seeing it with Giannis a little bit.
Yeah.
We're seeing, okay, this guy's great, but he's already won it twice. Let's give it to somebody else. And if Jokic, I believe, is the front runner this year. If Jokic wins it 2 years in a row, I don't believe you're going to let him win it again. Because I think you're going to see that voter fatigue. So in all these things, kind of getting ready to wrap this discussion up, I feel like we've got to start putting more emphasis on player voting.
Yeah.
Same with Cooperstown with baseball, but that's for a different day.
We need to have a discussion about that. Gosh, I'm tempted to make this episode go longer. Let's touch on that quickly. I completely let that slip my mind. You know, the MVP or the Cooperstown voting selections came out. Only one selected, that was David Ortiz, Barry Bonds, and Roger Clemens, among others, alongside Sammy Sosa, pretty much have their Hall of Fame hopes dashed. They still technically can get in, but it's extremely unlikely. And I'm going to resort this conversation over really to Toby, because Toby is who I would consider our MLB guy on this podcast. And Toby, I know you've been pretty heated about this topic.
Man, I have been heated about it. And I just want to first and foremost say I love David Ortiz. I have had the luxury of watching David Ortiz. I grew up with him. But this Cooperstown selection really just eked me really hard, because Barry Bonds sat on that list for 10 years. 10 years. And I think the closest he ever came was 65%. Sammy Sosa sat on that for 10 years. Roger Clemens for 10 years. None of those guys ever got close to the 75% needed.
To interrupt, yeah, I was about to say, glad you said that, Toby. For in case you aren't a big MLB follower, you do need 75% of the vote. You need to be on 75% of the ballots in order to get in.
And I'm just going to say, I'm putting my tinfoil hat back on, because I actually looked at a lot of tweets that a lot of these, the people who selected, a lot of the media, they were posting their ballots. Every single person I saw had Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, Roger Clemens on that ballot. I don't understand how you can have the greatest baseball player of all time, and it's not even close, cannot get elected to the Hall of Fame.
Come on, Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds, he's the greatest player of all time. Even before he took steroids or whatever you want to say, he had a Hall of Fame career before the age of 31.
I think it's a blot on Major League Baseball in general, though, when you don't put the all-time home run leader, you don't put the all-time hits leader with Pete Rose. I mean, if your history is not in Cooperstown, then that is a blot on your sport.
This is what I want to say about it real quick, too, is that in 2003, 162 players were randomly drug tested. David Ortiz and Sammy Sosa were both on that list. They both tested positive for PEDs. David Ortiz retires and he goes straight into the media. Sammy Sosa secludes himself, doesn't talk to anybody. David Ortiz still gets in. The only reason he got in is, I believe he had a great career. I'm not gonna take that away from him. But the reason why he got in is because he sold himself out to the media, and Sammy Sosa did not.
And that's why players need to vote on it.
How do you have four straight seasons with 60 plus home runs? He's the only player ever to do that, and he doesn't even get close. I don't even think Sammy Sosa in the 10 years had over 40% of the votes.
Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire saved baseball.
They did, and Mark McGwire, he was a great player too, and I'm not ever taking nothing away from him. But it really ekes me, and I wish they would change voting so drastically, because this has happened multiple times, and I think it needs to change.
Toby, I joked with you earlier in the week, more joking about Bonds and stuff, because I could tell how heated you were on it. But I do agree. If I told y'all last week, my criteria for the NFL Hall of Fame is, or the Pro Football Hall of Fame is, can you tell the story of football without them? I think it's the same for Cooperstown. Can you tell the story of baseball without them? You can't without Bonds, McGwire, Sosa. And like you said, kind of Grady, about them saving baseball, if you were okay with sweeping the PEDs under the rug for them to save baseball, sweep them under the rug for them to go into the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. And I agree with that 100%. And it really kills me that, you know, talking about Pete Rose, I mean, Pete Rose, you could argue is a top 10 player of all time, and he can't ever get in the Hall of Fame because he bet on his own team to win.
I would say top five greatest players of all time.
Yeah, and that's one thing I love about baseball, is that you have 15 guys that you can put in the top five, and you can debate it all day long.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But I believe, y'all, we're about at an hour. This episode had a lot in it, but man, it was fun. That was a
dude, Peyton, you got me so mad. I'm sitting in my room, dude, I'm not even lying. I'm so mad right now.
Look, I'd forgotten about it. Grady, I'm glad you discussed it, because this was something when they came out last week, like right after we had recorded. I remember, Toby, you were the one that said, we got to talk about this. I mean, we got to talk about this.
And I think baseball. It's so mindset that if you don't sell out, you can't get in. And you know, we're talking about, I guess it was Jeter last year, right? I mean, Jeter had a great career, but, you know, kind of sold out in a sense, right? I think he was the only one that got selected last year, correct?
I believe so. And funny thing about it, that is the no. I believe it was it 2 years ago with Jeter? Because I don't believe anybody got selected for Cooperstown last year.
It may be. I know it's between one and two, but I'm pretty sure Jeter was the only one.
So in the last 3 years, there's only been two players selected. In the last 8 years before that, I believe it was 21 players have been selected.
And
one thing I want to know what Chuck had to say a minute ago. That bothers me. I want to know what he had to say.
The one, well, this is about Bonds. But this what the San Francisco Giants need to do is sign him to a contract, let him play one game, that lets his clock reset for the Hall of Fame. I saw that on Instagram a couple seconds ago and actually put it on my story.
You know what's crazy as Chuck is the Giants, I could see them doing something like that. He would sit there for 10 years and not at 75%.
I think you're exactly right, Toby.
And it ekes me. It really does. And I love baseball. I'm a baseball guy. It's my favorite sport. I love the Chicago Cubs. We all know that. But I love baseball in general. But something needs to change because that can never happen again. And which I know we could say Mike Trout, he's automatic lock-in. But another guy, another generational talent, 15, 20 years from now, something like that could happen to him, and he'll be stuck in limbo and can never make the Hall of Fame.
Go ahead, Chuck.
How does Andrew Jones not make it either? Like, I know it wasn't this year, but, like, I felt like he was a snub for the Hall of Fame, too. I was talking to one of my buddies today about it. He's probably one of the best center fielders of all time, like, defensively, and he hit nukes, too. Like,
you talk about that, but I just want to bring it out real quick. It's the first time A-Rod has been on the Hall of Fame ballot. If A-Rod gets in over Barry Bonds, we should have a riot in Cooperstown, New York.
Oh, man. But That's going to be definitely something to contest because A-Rod didn't even get close to sniffing it this year. But
it's because there were so many other people before him, I think. And
I think you're exactly right. But I'm gonna end off the discussion with this. You know, college baseball is rapidly increasing in popularity, despite, you know, so many people saying the MLB has decreased in the past years because baseball is a dying sport. I disagree. College baseball is growing at rapid popularity. MLB has to change something or is going to die out.
I mean, the players, I mean, they want to end blackouts. That is one thing that I think if it happens, it'll save baseball. But I was reading, and I'll make this last statement real quick, is that I've been reading reports that I think it was Fox Sports, ESPN, and another big broadcasting company has come out to said if the lockout continues into mid-February, they're going to try to pick up the rights and show more college baseball this season.
Be great for the sport and for college baseball in general, no doubt about it. But guys, like I said, this was a fun one. Corey, I want to thank you real quick. The NBA talk was the first time we've done it. That was really fun. I appreciate your insight. We'll definitely look for Corey to come back in just a few weeks when we talk trade deadline and midseason team recaps and award races.
Appreciate it.
But guys, with that, I believe we're about wrapped up. Is there any final comments to say?
I think this was a fun episode. I think there was a lot of good back and forth, and you got me super mad right now.
I'm eager for baseball now. That's what that made me really eager for.
I think we're all ready to be in Swayze.
I'm hoping that Maple Jordan proves me wrong all star weekend.
Maple Jordan?
Yeah, free throw line dunk.
Not as good as Maple Mamba.
Yes, sir. Ja Morant in the dunk contest or we riot.
That would be great.
Amen. Ja Morant, first team All-NBA, or we riot.
Look, that one's truth, and that one, hopefully he's heading for that direction. But regardless,
let's get that man a Supermax.
Please, I don't want to think about a Supermax right now. But anyway.
We're going to do hot takes. I've got a hot take.
Go ahead. Hit me with a hot take before we close out.
I'm for the Rams, but I think the Bengals will win by 2 touchdowns in the Super Bowl.
Grady, I told you earlier, don't do your predictions this week. Come on, man.
That's my projection right now. It'll change next week.
Yeah, it probably will change next week. But, oh, my gosh.
2 touchdowns. Mark it down.
Toby, Chuck, any final comments? Any hot takes?
No, man. No hot takes this week.
Corey, you got anything for us?
I think Chuck had some.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, I do have it's just a quick little fact about Andrew Jones. I didn't – think about this, but there's two people not in the Hall of Fame who had above a 45 WAR, which is win above replacement. And those two are Mike Trout and Andrew Jones. And that's all I got.
Ooh. To be in that company with Mike Trout, that's tough.
Is Mike Trout unanimous?
Yes, I think he'll be the first player in I think history to receive 100%.
I thought Mariano Rivera was.
Mariano
well, he
Rivera.
Was. You know, Mariano Rivera, yes, you're correct. Second player.
First position player.
Yeah, we can have that. We can give him that.
No about it. But, guys, I'm going to wrap it up for us. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. Again, if you're not tuned with us on social media, Follow us at Sports Hour Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Stay tuned there. We got a fun surprise coming for you next week. But for Toby Leach, for Grady Gardner, for Buzz Gardner, for Chuck Spencer, and for Corey Willis, I'm Peyton Taylor saying so long. God bless. Thanks for listening.